Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 19th of August. After all this time, we haven't had a chance to talk about the Olympics, and so today we will do that. Many of you have been following, I'm sure many of the games very closely. You have a favorite sport, and you'd like to just talk about it. I could spend the whole hour talking about Phelps because I've been following the swimming so avidly. It's kept me up at night. We have three guests with us this hour. The first is joining us from Beijing. He's covering the Olympics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, writing daily about this and blogging about the Olympics as well. Gary D'Amato is joining us. Later, we'll be speaking with a sports reporter for the Capital Times who's been following all the Wisconsin athletes. And because Phelps has been such a big part of the Olympics and wants to make swimming an even bigger sport, we'll be speaking with Matt Miller later, who's a swimming coach and co-director of the Walter Schrader Aquatic Center, which is based here in Milwaukee. And so we will talk about the sport of swimming more extensively later on. Welcoming your phone calls. Actually, this is a great chance for you to talk about who you've been watching and what you think of the Olympics so far in Beijing. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050, 227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And we start our conversation with Gary D'Amato, journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who's reporting on the Olympics from Beijing. Gary, hello. Oh, he's not with us yet. Okay, we're trying to reach him. Let me tell you that the second hour of our program today, let me get the book so I make sure I have the right title. John Zogby will be joining us. John, of course, has been with us several times before, and he has a new book which is very interesting. It talks about dramatic changes in the way we will be. The book is The Way We'll Be, The Zogby Report on the Transformation of the American Dream. It looks at a lot of issues, presidential races and advertising and Walmart. And if you shop at Walmart, it's an indication of where your political leanings are. It's a fascinating book. So he will be with us the second hour of our show. And we have made contact with Gary D'Amato, who is a journalist and has been blogging and writing for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Beijing. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? This is the point.
I'm a little tired,
yeah.
But I'm doing well. Thank you.
This is the point where you say, oh, I want to be home pretty soon, isn't it? It's a hard, hard thing to do to cover this every day, I'm sure.
It is. It's, it's 17 long days. They're 15 to 18-hour work days, and you don't get much of a break. But on the other hand, it's a fantastic experience. This is Olympic Games number 6 for me, and I wouldn't trade it for any other assignment. It's a great assignment, and I'm happy to be here. But it does get long after a while that the days just kind of run into each other, and you find yourself just trying to find an hour or two where you can just lay, put your head down somewhere and try to get a little nap to catch up on all the sleep you've lost.
Right. That's what you need. Naps are good things. At least 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's what you need.
Right.
So what's been one of the more exciting events, before we talk about Phelps and others, that you've been covering that you think the world hasn't paid enough attention to?
Well, I've been at gymnastics, swimming, and tonight I just covered a baseball game, and I don't think the world is paying much attention to baseball at all. Unfortunately, baseball and softball both are going to be dropped from the Summer Olympics after the Beijing Games. And softball, a lot of people think, has a chance to make it back in 2016. But baseball, I think, I'm afraid, is probably going to go away forever from the games for a couple of reasons. One is the performance-enhancing drugs issue that Major League Baseball has been plagued with. And two, the Major League Baseball doesn't send over its best players, and the International Olympic Committee wants the very best athletes represented in each sport at the game. So baseball has a couple of things going against it, but I'll tell you what, the level of play is really, really good. The U.S. just beat Chinese Taipei 4-2 in a well-played game, and I don't think probably most people are paying attention to baseball back home.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be sorry to see it go for the next Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as one of the players said tonight that I interviewed, baseball is a summer game, and these are the Summer Olympics, and it's played around the world now. It's really a global game. The Far East, obviously, has really embraced baseball. China's only been playing for a few years, but they've made rapid improvement in the sport, and it's played all over the world. Obviously, it's a very popular sport in Latin America, so it's just unfortunate that it probably will never be coming back. I mean, I guess you can never say never, but I think the odds are stacked against baseball coming back.
Right. Obviously, the story that we've been following here, and I've been following it a lot because I used to be a swimmer, but this Phelps story is something, isn't it? When you think about when the game started and what he accomplished, I don't know. I was cheering for him. I don't do this very often, but I was literally applauding in front of the television set.
Well, and, you know, he had a, you know, he smashed a bunch of world records, but he had, you know, he had a couple of races where it was not a given by any means that he was going to win. And in particular, it was the 100 butterfly when he just touched out the Serbian swimmer, Pavic, at the wall. And a lot of people, I mean, it was an optical illusion. I was there, and it looked to me like Pavic won the race, but I guess all the underwater cameras and all the, you know, the video time to a 10,000th of a second proved that Phelps got there first. But that was a big scare. I mean, if Kovac wins that race and he lost it by less, probably an inch, you know, that the games had a, he still would have won seven. Phelps still would have won seven gold medals, which would have been huge tying marks. But the
sure.
fact that he was able to win eight obviously becomes a, you know, a huge story.
Right. And does it, people were talking, Gary, about whether or not he's the greatest Olympian in history now. That was said by many commentators. Does that make him the greatest Olympian in history?
You know, if you just go by number of gold medals won, and he's at 14 now, I mean, there's no question he's head and shoulders above anyone. But I really don't think you can call him the greatest Olympian ever. We just look at a guy like Eric Heiden, who won five gold medals
right.
at the Winter Games. And Eric dominated his sport, speed skating, and won races at every distance from sprints to the longest race. Well, Phelps isn't a sprinter. I mean, if he can somehow enter the next Olympic Games and win a bunch of 50 and 100-meter sprints, then I'll say, you know, I'll be willing to say he's the greatest Olympian of all time. And plus, it's so hard to compare sport to sport. What about a marathon runner who, you know, only wins one medal but maybe wins two Olympic Games? Two gold medals. That would be an amazing feat, but he wouldn't have the medal count to compare to Phelps. So it's really hard to compare.
Right. Somebody was writing a few days ago about the fact that the medals for him, each medal will be worth, in whatever form it takes, $5 million. What does he get? Does he get endorsements from people, or is his face on
yes.
billboards? Really?
Well, the USOC does pay for medals, and I believe it's $40,000 for a gold, so 4 times 80, he's made $320,000 just on his medals. But obviously, he's going to parlay that into endorsement contracts. He's already earned seven figures with all his contracts with his sponsors, and it's going to be astronomical what he's going to be able to probably triple or quadruple what he's, you know, the contract he's got with sponsors, and he's
mm-hmm.
going to add some more. So,
hmm.
you know, so I would guess that he's going to be in the $5 million a year range
mm-hmm.
as a swimmer, which is unheard of.
Right. Well, he spent a lot of years training for it, right?
He did. That he did, yes.
And he has a dog. That's nice. And he loves his dog.
you know, the thing about him is, you know, I don't pretend to know him. I've just covered him here at the Olympic Games. But I'm talking with people who have known him and covered him going back to his days as a young swimmer in Baltimore. Everyone says he hasn't changed one bit. All his success hasn't changed him as a person. He's all the guys on the swim team who swam with him in the relays or against him in individual events said he's just about as nice a guy as you could want to be around. So it's kind of nice that sort of success hasn't really gone to his head.
That's good to hear. There was a lot of concern, as you know, Gary, about the weather, about the smog, about pollution in Beijing. Have you been concerned about that? Has that been an ongoing story in the Olympics, or are the skies pretty clear?
You know, to be honest, Kathleen, I forgot about it after 2 days. There are days when it's hazy, but that's, I think, more due to the humidity than it would be pollution, because when the humidity is down like it was today, the skies were blue, and, I mean, you could see for miles there was no problem with pollution. I think, obviously, you know, Beijing and China have taken a lot of steps to curb the pollutants. They've, you know, knocked a lot of traffic off the road and shut down factories temporarily, and it seems to have worked. Although I will say, even though they've shut down, you know, they've gotten a lot of cars off the road, I can't believe how much traffic is here. It's unbelievable. So I can't imagine what it's like when there's 30% more cars on the road in a week here.
Do you feel like everybody in Beijing has been preparing for your arrival?
There's no question about it. The Chinese people have 100% embraced these games. In 2001, there was a survey done in China or in Beijing asking people their impressions, were they favorable or not favorable about the Olympics coming, and it was 96% favorable. So that's a pretty impressive number right there. Everywhere I've gone, people have, if you start with the volunteers, 100,000 volunteers, well-trained, they're very efficient, very organized. They're all young men and women in their, I'd say, between 18 and 25, mostly university students. They all speak some English, and I'll tell you, if you just stop and pull out a map, there will be five volunteers at your side within seconds to help you out. So it's quite amazing the way that the games are being run. They're very efficiently run. I've never seen anything like it. And London has a hard act to follow in 4 years.
They sure do. Anybody has a hard act to follow, I would think.
Yeah.
What about those opening ceremonies? I must say, we talk about it here all the time, but I was just, they were so extraordinary. They were so beautiful, and the kind of Olympics that probably only China could have done, with the kind of precision, and you knew they had practiced and practiced so many people and done so flawlessly.
And just the imagination that went into staging those, let alone the precision and all the people involved and the technical aspects. Just the imagination to come up with some of the ideas, like the gymnast running, you know, spacewalking around the rim of the stadium to light the cauldron. How do you think of those things? And the thing is, you kind of feel sorry for whoever is going to be in charge of opening ceremony in London, because they always try to top each other. Each one gets a little more extravagant, but I don't know how you topped that opening ceremony a couple of weeks ago. That was about as good as I think it can get.
Yeah. There's been, as you know, some controversy about ages of those who are in the Olympics, particularly the Chinese who are in the Olympics. Is that a big story for you? Is it a big story in Beijing?
I wouldn't say it's a big story, but it's kind of rumbling under the surface. It all started when Xinhua, one of the Chinese news agencies like the Associated Press in our country, was covering gymnastics and a gymnastics event a couple months ago and reported the age of one of the gymnasts as 13 on their own team. So that journalist was reprimanded to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, that seems to be proof that some, at least one, if not more, of the girls on the gymnastics teams were underage. They're said to have falsified passports. The New York Times reported on that. It's unfortunate, but you can unfortunately see that kind of thing happening in a state-run sports program, as China has, where the government runs sports programs. Not saying it couldn't happen in other countries, although I don't think it would happen in the United States, but it's happened here, apparently. And it's a story. I don't know if it's a huge story, but it's definitely a story.
Mm-hmm. You've been covering a lot of Olympics and covering a lot of sports. When I see, just as an observer, those gymnasts, I always say, how can any human body do that feat? How can you turn yourself in the air two times around, do a twist? I just can't imagine it. Do you feel that way about that sport or any other sports, that it just seems beyond what a human being can do?
I do, and gymnastics in particular, and even figure skating in the winter games.
Yes,
people sort of take figure skating for granted, but to be so athletic and so graceful at the same time, obviously, you know, years and years and hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of training. But the gymnast, what a lot of people don't realize about gymnastics is that it's a very brutal sport physically. It's very hard on the body, and what we saw with Paul and Morgan Hamm of Waukesha both having to withdraw because of injuries. Chelsea Memel broke her ankle a week before the game started and competed on the uneven bars with a broken ankle. A lot of injuries in that sport. It's very hard on the joints. And I think if you get to be 18 and you're a gymnast and you've never seen an orthopedic surgeon, you can count yourself as pretty lucky.
Right. And Gary, how could somebody compete with a broken ankle? What do you change your mindset? Do you not feel the pain or what?
Well, I know she felt the pain. I guess you have to be extremely mentally tough. She had to mount the bars, which required her to run a few steps and jump onto the bars. which I don't think was that big a deal, but I think the big deal was the dismount, because you're launching yourself into the air. You're, you know, she was 10 or 15 feet above the ground doing somersaults, twists in the air, and landing on that ankle. And I'm sure when she was on the bars, in the back of her mind, the voice was saying, here comes a dismount, here comes a dismount.
Mm-hmm.
But she handled it very well, and nobody even knew she had a broken ankle until she actually told me in the mix zone after her last competition. That's the first anyone knew. She had, they had kept this, the injury pretty quiet. They didn't want China to know that she was hurt pretty badly.
Right. I just wonder what it does to that ankle for the rest of her life, if you're competing at that kind of level, to be hurt that badly. Oof. That hurts to
think
about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she stressed that it was her decision to compete, that it was hers alone. She thought she could handle the pain, and they monitored her. She actually chipped the bone.
It was,
the bone was away from the ankle, but they monitored it to make sure it wasn't moving, and had the bone chip move, and could have presented a problem. Maybe at that point she couldn't have competed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she came out of it with basically a fracture that's going to heal just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's going to be any lasting repercussions with that injury.
Yeah, we'll ask Gary what he's covering today in a moment. I just want to tell you we have three guests today. Gary's time is limited from Beijing, so you need to call in quickly if you want to speak with him. If not, it's okay. I'm happy to do that. But some of you may want to talk to him. He's in Beijing right now, and the number is 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the email address is talk@WPR.org. We'll be talking more about swimming and about Wisconsin athletes as we continue this hour. But if you'd like to speak to Gary, please call in right away. So what's on the agenda for you, Gary, the rest of the week?
Well, actually, it's going to be a busy last few days of the Olympics for me. We have a wrestler from Heartland named Ben Askren who's wrestling tomorrow, which is Wednesday. What time is it back home? It's Tuesday morning back home, right?
I know. I get confused, too. Yeah, it's about 20 after 9.
Yeah. Well, Ben wrestles in the morning, my time, here in Beijing, and on Wednesday morning. And the women's soccer team is going to be going playing for the gold medal. I think the men's basketball team is going to be playing for the gold medal. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We still have a track guy from University of Wisconsin, Matt Tegenkamp, who runs in the 5,000 meters tomorrow night. So there's still an awful lot going on. I'm going to be all over the place, but it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Is it fairly compact, or do you have to go a great distance from one event to another?
It is fairly compact for most, for probably two-thirds of the venues are within, I'd say, a three-square-mile area that they, you know, the Chinese leveled some old Hutong neighborhoods, some old centuries-old neighborhoods to build the Olympic Green, which is huge, and it's got a couple of the stadiums, the National Stadium, the National Indoor Stadium, the fencing hall, and then it's a bus ride out to where I am tonight, the baseball stadium, a 20-minute bus ride. Some venues are 35, 40 minutes away, but everything is pretty compact, and the buses are running on time, which is always good.
That's good. One phone call for you. We'll let you go. Brian from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen and Mr. D'Amato. I just wanted to praise his column this morning. I was laughing out loud, his column in the Journal Sentinel this morning about his experience shopping in China. I wanted to make some comments about that. I thought it was very funny. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Brian. I appreciate that. It was a wild, wild adventure at the silk market here in China. And had fun writing that story, so I appreciate that comment. Thank you.
What did you wind up buying, Gary?
You know, I bought some stuff that I didn't even want. I mean, they're so good. The salespeople are so good. It's hard to get away from them. I bought a tea set. I bought a couple of silk scarves. I bought a polo golf shirt, which isn't really polo, by the way. I'm sure it's a knockoff. But,
right.
I bought a bunch of junk that I can do without it, but I bought it.
That's what happens to me at State Fair when you watch those people show you how to use those machines. You think, oh, why didn't I think of that? I got to get one of those. I'm a sucker for
right.
it. Yeah. We'll look forward to your reporting. Thanks, Gary, so much for being with us, and have a nice long sleep when you get home.
Thanks for having me on, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Gary D'Amato, journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's reporting on the Olympics from Beijing, and you've been following his pieces. He did write a very funny column today about about shopping in China. We're going to continue talking about the Olympics, which we haven't done so far. We thought we'd cover a couple different angles. Todd Mileski, who's a sports reporter for the Capital Times, will be joining us in a moment. He's been following Wisconsin athletes. And later, we'll look at the sport of swimming with Matt Miller, who's a swimming coach and co-director of the Walter Schrader Aquatic Center. He's been training Olympians for the swimming event, and we'll look at the Michael Phelps' 8 gold medals and how significant that was and what he can do for the sport of swimming as a result of having won all of those races. Welcome to your phone calls again, as we always do. Our number, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 in Milwaukee, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, John Zogby, the very well-known pollster, will be joining us. And he is the author of The Way Will Be, the Zogby Report on the Transformation of the American Dream. He says that it's rapidly being redefined by four meta-movements: living with limits as consumers and citizens, embracing diversity of views and ways of life, looking inward to find spiritual comfort, and demanding authenticity from the media, our leaders, and our leading institutions. The Olympics this hour, and we speak now with Todd Mileski, who's a sports reporter for the Capital Times, and they have been following and tracking all of the Wisconsin Olympians as the game started. What is it now? Almost getting close to 2 weeks ago. We welcome phone calls for Todd, and our number is 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. talk@wpr.org is our email address. Hello, Todd. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So you've been tracking all the Wisconsin people. How many are there at the Olympics?
Oh, well, if you include the coaches that are along with, not just the athletes, it's somewhere, I believe, 18 or 19, I think, is the total. I've been tracking 15 athletes, though.
Mm-hmm. And are Wisconsin athletes more likely to participate in Winter Olympics or in summer, or is it about equal?
Well, you know, I think the common perception is that it does skew towards winter, because that's maybe where the history has been. You know, you think of the 1980 U.S. Olympic team that had two Wisconsin natives on it. You think of Eric Heiden in those same games from Madison. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not necessarily it's all toward that. It seems like, you know, there being the connections from the University of Wisconsin with track and field and rowing and the other summer sports, and, you know, just from, you know, gymnastics, looking at that, there's usually a connection in the Milwaukee area. There's a pretty good balance, I think, and there's a lot of representation in the summer games, just because there's so many more sports in the summer games.
Tell me about that rowing story of the young person who showed up, I believe, at Madison, and somebody looked at him and said, "You look like an athlete. Let's sign you up."
Well, and it turns out that's how they get most of their recruits.
Really?
The rowing team. Yeah, they go to the summer registration, the freshman registration at one of the unions here on campus, and they basically, from what I've been told, they stand there and look for the tallest guys they can find.
Huh?
So, you know, the ones that have their heads above everyone else that are the ones they're looking for, because that's the kind of body that's most readily associated with rowing. Not to say that if you have a different body type, you're not going to be able to get by in the sport. But if they're looking for the people that they think are going to stand out, you know, just without knowing them, without having any knowledge of their athletic abilities, they're going to gravitate towards the taller guys. And Bo Hoopman was one of those guys. I believe he's 6'3 or 6'4. When he came to his freshman orientation, he got kind of picked out and said, "Hey, you look like you may be an athlete. Do you want to try out for the rowing team?" He's like, "Well, okay, I guess I could." His dad originally wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of the idea, because he thought maybe it'd take away from the academic side of things that he was going toward here at school, obviously, and but later on, it became clear that it actually helped out in schooling and gave, you know, a better focus towards things, and really he became
what he told me once was, you know, his biggest fan in the whole thing, and obviously it's paid off pretty well.
It sure has. Let's talk about body types for a while, as long as you brought it up. So much was made of Michael Phelps' body being the perfect body for swimming, which I never would have thought of. I would have thought, you know, if you're smaller, you go through the water faster, et cetera. The gymnast, if you're very, very small, it seems to benefit you in your ability to do your flips and all of that. Are there certain body types that you almost have to have to compete at the Olympic level?
You know, I don't know if necessarily it's a must-have, but it seems like the more and more we look at it, it seems like, yeah, there's certain individuals that fit into these categories, and basically that's the sport they're in. You know, NBC showed a bunch of times, you know, everything about Michael Phelps, you know, body and his double-jointed knees and how that helps with propelling himself through the water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just like those things that are like, wow, maybe he was made to be a swimmer and, you know, an unbelievably, you know, talented swimmer. And then, like you talk about with gymnasts, if you have a, you know, a smaller frame and you know, are able to, you know, obviously, but still have the strength in your upper body to be able to do all those things. There's definitely the types of bodies, but that doesn't really necessarily undercut the idea of you have to have that work ethic that
sure.
gives you the strength to be able to do all this stuff and keep that strength and to be able to keep working toward, you know, improving your overall routines and your body and everything like that. That's probably the biggest part of it.
And they also say that about runners. There are certain, the Kenyan runners are supposed to be the best in the world. It looks like the Jamaicans are quite good in this Olympics, too. But I heard an interview yesterday that talked about how it's so much a part of the culture, too, that you start running and you have national championships when you're very, very young in Jamaica. So that makes a big difference, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, part of the tradition that's handed down, and you hear everyone talking about, well, I saw him compete, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, mm-hmm. in the Olympics, however long it was ago, and that was my spark. I think that's one of the great stories, you know, of the Olympics in general, is just that how one person, you know, can start the train going for so many other people. And, you know, maybe we'll see that now with Michael Phelps, you know, not just here in this country, but that was a worldwide phenomenon. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lot come of that over the next 2 years.
Yeah. Tell me what you thought about that eighth gold. Well, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth gold medal. It was just extraordinary. And maybe my perspective is skewed because I love swimming and have been a swimmer, but it was just something, wasn't it?
Well, it was such a captivating event. And you know, kudos to NBC for, I mean, you know, I'm somewhat critical of them sometimes for over dramatizing a lot of the events that they show in the Olympics, but they really played that right. I mean, it was the biggest event of these Olympics, and they played it as such, and, you know, made so many connections with the Mark Spitz interviews that they did, you know, before or after he won his, I believe, seventh gold medal the day before. And, you know, that I was at home with my wife watching on the couch that night when he won his eighth. And it was one of those events that you got wrapped up in. I mean, and for me, that doesn't happen much anymore. I tend to have a disassociation with sporting events because I'm just covering them. But, you know, that was one of those ones that, you know, it was like, get to the finish, get there and win.
Yes,
and then,
I know. Go.
Yeah, exactly.
We're saying,
and,
right.
You know, that was kind of refreshing to have that for me anyway, to have that happen, because like I was saying, I don't get that feeling much anymore. But yeah, that was, and that told me, you know, how much of an event this was, and you know, I'm sure, you know, the ratings indicate as much too.
Right. Let's go to some phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Todd Molesky, sports reporter for the Capital Times, is with us this part of the show, and we're talking about the Olympics. We haven't had a chance to do so since they started, so this is the day before we get vice presidential candidate nominations out there, and we'll be talking about that. Kevin from Viroqua is a caller coming up now. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's nice to hear you talking about sports on Wisconsin Public Radio. I was a couple of weeks ago, you had on the sports writer Dave Zirin, and I'd like to just read a few quick quotes he has from his book, Welcome to the Terror Dome, about the Olympics. He goes, "For more than a century, The Olympics have been run by the International Olympic Committee, IOC, a club for fossilized aristocrats with nostalgia for anything with epaulettes. And then he goes on to quote about the head of the IOC, Samaranch Ranch, 1980, and he says, Samaranch was also notoriously corrupt, overseeing the transformation of the Olympics from a Cold War spectacle to a corporate feeding frenzy of privatization and payoffs. And then the last quick quote is, in the peculiar language of Olympic ease, sport is a synonym for graft. This heartless plundering has, in the post-Cold War era, become the Olympic ideal. It's not faster, higher, and stronger. It's, we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. So I'm wondering if your guest, the sports writer, has heard about Dave Zirin and what he thinks about this perspective.
Have you skipped the games, Kevin?
Oh, no.
You haven't?
No, I've been watching the games. In fact, I'm going to watch that long-distance runner in the 5,000-meter from University of Wisconsin. You
uh-huh.
bet.
Uh-huh. Okay. Todd?
You know, I hadn't heard that, and it's definitely an interesting perspective. The thing that stands out in my mind is that, you know, I think you could probably make that case for a lot of sports, you know, that we follow. Not necessarily just the Olympics. You know, the Olympics is obviously a pretty good subject to bring it up with because, you know, it obviously does have the worldwide impact. Everyone has a connection to it in some way, you know, through the country or maybe even just following it on TV. You know, yeah, the IOC has developed into a, and you know, I guess, you know, saying the IOC, I mean the Olympics in general, into a large corporation, basically. But it to feed what, the way I look at it, to feed at what people have kind of indicated that they wanted to have. You know, everyone would like to have an Olympic ideal of, you know, the athlete, you know, performing their best for their team or for their country. And, you know, I believe we still have that. Although at where sports are now in our culture, it definitely has become more sponsored or commercial, mm-hmm. If you want to call it that way. But, you know, there's a lot of money that's needed to make things like this run on a worldwide event. And, you know, we saw in 1984 in Los Angeles that really the first Olympics, of, you know, in many years to be able to be self-sustaining. And, you know, that was through sponsorship and corporate influence and those kind of matters and the use of volunteers. In that respect, you know, I think that kind of showed everyone that, you know, this is the direction we're going with Olympics and maybe in sports, that, you know, there's going to be a corporate thing. And it really has happened that way over, 24 years now. So, you know, I understand that, you know, there's concern with that and you don't want the ideal to go away. But maybe, you know, this is one of the things that we just have to live with and, you know, put up with the commercials and kind of go with that.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that we thought would come in much larger measure, I think, from Beijing was the number of protests. And now in the last couple of days, we've discovered how difficult it is to protest. It's almost impossible.
Right.
So there haven't been many.
Yeah. And, you know, I was kind of waiting for that at the start. You know, what was going to be the big protest or which athlete was mm-hmm. going to make the big protest. I haven't personally seen any athlete protests yet. I don't know if there have been, and we haven't just heard about them. But, you know, yeah, it's part of the intrigue of maybe these games. That you don't know what's going to happen on that end of it. That's more than just the sporting event this time. That there's obviously mm-hmm. political ramifications
right.
for it with China.
Thanks, Kevin, for the call. We go to Tom next from Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing just great. I think this has been a pretty kind of remarkable Olympics. Number one, I think the Chinese have done a great job, and I'm glad to see them, you know, emerging as a good competitive power in the Olympics. And I always love to see the home, you know, the home team crowd kind of do well, just like the Italians did at the Winter Olympics. But one of the things I wanted to comment on as a fencer myself is the extraordinary job of the American fencing team. From what I understand, they've won more medals this Olympics than they have in the last 60 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. And just a little side note, we have a kind of out-of-the-way Wisconsin connection. Mariel Zagunas, who fences for Notre Dame, one of our fencers at our local club here in Milwaukee, is also on the Notre Dame team. Hmm. So maybe they fenced a little bit. So just wanted to give my kudos to the fencing club.
Thank you very much for calling. And it's one of those sports not followed very closely. I'm wondering how often, Todd, because the nature of competition, a sports breaks through that you haven't really paid much attention to, like fencing.
Well, and this is one of the things that I love about the Olympics, and especially now that you're able to watch a lot of events online as they happen, or, you know, even on replay that don't get the TV coverage. Every 4 years, I remember that I really like handball, and it's one of those sports that you never see around here because it's just not played very much around here. But I, for some reason, I don't know why, it's one I tend to follow, you know, not sports that aren't followed very well by others. But I just find myself drawn to that, and you know, you see all these other sports that you don't see, but for the Olympics in our country, and yeah, it's really nice to be able to see, you know, some diversity in the landscape of sports in our country sometimes. Because, you know, most of the time, you know, especially in summer, we gravitate towards baseball. And then when baseball's getting done, we're hit with football. And, you know, then there's basketball and hockey. And, you know, then all of a sudden, again, we're back around to baseball. And that's all we tend to hear about. And, yeah, it's nice to get some different faces in the crowd there.
There was an interesting baseball story from Beijing that was in the Tribune today. The Chicago Tribune reports on a brutal baseball game between the U.S. and China.
Yeah.
American batters getting hit by Chinese pitches, and their opening line was, "Our relations with China were nearly broken at the plate."
The funny thing about that, or you know, one of the connections, is that the manager of the Chinese team is an American who used to manage in the major leagues for a number of years. So, yeah, there's a... And, you know, the American manager is, you know, managed against them, I'm sure, a number of times, too. Huh. So,
of all the sports, is there something that you just, if you could fulfill a dream and you'd want to jump into one of them in Beijing or wherever, what would that sport be? Many of them?
I'm so far removed from being able to do any of that that it's hard to even picture. But I guess when I think of it, I do wish I could do some of the things that I see swimmers do. I mean, you know, because, you know, I know how to swim. You know, everyone who knows how to swim can at least, you know, maybe picture themselves doing some of that.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, not just what Michael Phelps did, but, you know, what a lot of the Americans have done, and, you know, what's done in that pool in terms of speed and agility.
Mm-hmm.
It's just remarkable to me.
Yeah, it is remarkable. Well, such a pleasure, Todd, to have you on. Thank you so much, and thanks for all of your reporting. It's been fun to follow.
Yeah.
Enjoyed our time. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kathleen.
Todd Molesky, sports reporter for the Capital Times. We will concentrate on swimming because Phelps, of course, the huge story out of the Olympics from Beijing. Matt Miller is a swimming coach and co-director of the Walter Schrader Aquatic Center, which is based here in the Milwaukee area, and has that center has trained some of the Olympians, actually. So we'll talk about the feat of Phelps and how to make this sport, as Michael Phelps would like to do, a sport that gets more respect and that is a larger sport here in America. So we'll talk about that with Matt in just a moment. And take more phone calls, too. Join us at 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. Or send an email. We already have one on swimming, so we'll take that in a minute. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, John Zogby will be with us. John has a new book, and it is The Way Will Be, the Zogby Report on the Transformation of the American Dream. So that's coming up. Got to find a place for the books next hour after the news. Matt Miller is a swimming coach and co-director of the Walter Schrader Aquatic Center, which is based here in the Milwaukee area and has done some training that center has for Olympic athletes. And we'll be talking about Michael Phelps' performance and how to elevate the sport of swimming to an even bigger deal. I don't know how it could have been much bigger than it was last week, but we'll talk about his impact on the sport of swimming for the remaining time here on the air. And welcome more of your phone calls. 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Matt. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah, our pleasure. Who have you been training at the Schrader Aquatic Center?
We have a whole age range from age 6 to our oldest athletes are 25 in our age group and developmental programs. So we have a very large range of kids in our program.
And have you been training any of the Olympians?
We have one gentleman who represented Poland in the 2004 Olympics and did not quite make the United States team after switching his nationality and to the United States this round.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend some time on Michael Phelps because he is the huge story here. It just astounds me that anybody can spend that much time swimming every day for so many years. Doesn't it astound you?
I guess I see athletes do that all the time.
Huh.
And it's not that surprising to me to see that kind of work and dedication from swimming athletes.
Mm-hmm. It's just hour after hour in the pool. The only thing that I love about it is that you can eat an incredible amount of food, right? You can go out for breakfast and then again and then again.
Certainly can. And these kids that we work with here certainly are not afraid to do that. It's one of the things that we laugh about when we go on travel trips with the kids.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about his accomplishment. How large was it, Matt?
I think that it's still yet to be determined. Obviously, nothing like that had been done since 1972 when Mark Spitz won his 7 gold medals. And there's nobody on the horizon or in the near future that has the promise probably to make that goal happen again anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't know for sure if he was going to do it, did you? It was part of the excitement of the game.
It was very exciting. And, as a swim coach and a person who's been around swimming my whole life, it was a tremendous week for swimming, and it will for sure be the only time where swimming leads the Packers in the news segment of news in the evening. So it was a joy to see that happen.
I was so happy to see the stories of young people all over the country who were going to the pools en masse because of his performance. Everybody wants to swim.
Yeah, and we certainly, this is the time of year where we get a number of calls for new kids interested in joining, and our numbers have certainly gone up in the volume of calls than we would typically get annually.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Karen Kaznerchak. Schick, I believe is how you say it. And she says she has a 20-year-old son who's been swimming competitively for the last 12 years. I hope Michael Phelps' achievement can increase the participation by boys and men in the sport of swimming and help increase the support of men swimming with the NCAA. Over the last 10 years, NCAA schools have been eliminating men's swimming programs in order to increase funding for revenue sports. We in the swimming community need to put pressure on schools to reverse this trend. Would you agree?
I would agree. There's been a number of marquee programs, large Division I institutions that have been faced with the decision of taking their men's program out of their athletic lineup, and it's unfortunate. There are certainly less scholarshiping opportunities for males than for females in the sport of swimming.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls for you, and we will start with Nancy from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. I have to preface my remark by telling you that I am not a sports-minded individual, but I did read an interesting article in the Chicago Tribune a few days ago, and this writer, I believe the article was on the op-ed page, and author said that he didn't think that no matter how many medals Phelps would win, he could not ever be judged to be the athlete of the century or any large specific title giving him power and glory, because swimming, the body is buoyed up by the water and it's constantly cooled, and therefore his activities cannot be possibly compared to a runner or a biker or a gymnast or in any way the energy that he expends cannot be compared to any of these other sports players.
Hmm. That's hard to imagine when you see him swim. I can't imagine that kind of energy. What do you think, Kent?
I don't know what the answer exactly would be to that, but I mean, when you level the playing field and you put that same runner or biker, I guess, into the water at the same kind of international level, I would be interested to see what would happen with those guys.
Swimming is very exhausting as well, isn't it? I'm just saying this from the perspective of somebody who's been swimming laps. It's a tiring sport.
Yeah, there's very few sports that I'm aware of that it is as enduring to participate in as swimming. You know, there's other sports like I heard on your show earlier, you were talking about crew and rowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one sport that has been shown to produce even more of an enduring workout, as well as things like cross-country skiing. So those are things that are at the level of swimming. I'm not sure where running and biking fall on that, but those are the other sports that are mentioned usually with the same kind of difficulty as swimming.
Hmm. Can you believe the goggles broke? Oh, my gosh, what a terrible thing for an Olympic swimmer.
It's something that definitely happens more commonly in an 8- or a 9-year-old, but
right.
you certainly see it at all levels. And, you know, it was unfortunate, but fortunately for Michael, it turned out to work out fine.
Right. Thanks very much, Nancy, for your call. We go to Jerry from Genesee Depot. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think someone has been forgotten in this thing. Michael Phelps is a great swimmer. I'm not a swimmer, and I enjoy watching him. But, hey, talk about a super athlete. Here's this 41-year-old woman,
right,
Doris, still competing. I wonder if Michael's going to be doing that at his age. That is a super athlete in my estimation.
She sure
I see
is.
That happen.
She sure is. And she looks just wonderful and is so incredibly happy.
Yeah, that was a very enjoyable piece to watch. Also, I would say in the swimming piece of the Olympics, she definitely works very hard and does everything correctly for her body to make her be able to compete at the highest level.
Mm-hmm. Is that unusual for somebody at the age of 41 to be able to swim that way? Does the body start winding down after, I don't know, 35 or 36 or not?
I think data has shown that the body typically starts to deteriorate, but I'm not sure if that's the case in every individual situation. Obviously, it's not with Dara Torres. She is performing at the best of her entire life at the age of 41, and in that 50, she did get second, but it was still an American record and her best time by a couple of tenths, which is significant in such a short race.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great deal of fun to watch the relays as well, to have to count on people to help you get your goal and count on people to do their personal best. It's an exciting thing to watch, I think, the teamwork.
Yes, it realized when I was competing were definitely my favorite part of the sport. Swimming is a very individual sport, but it's great when you can come together with a couple of other men or women and do something together to try to win something.
Where did you compete, Matt?
I competed in college at Kenyon College. It's a small school in the middle of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. And your stroke is, or do you have many?
I was also a sprinter. I swam short distances. It was mm-hmm. quite a while ago, but.
And which is harder, to swim the short distances or to swim the longer distances? I guess there's one race that's going on. When is this going on where they're swimming 6 miles?
Yeah, that's the Open Water Championships, and that's actually a new event for the Olympics this year. And that is very grueling and difficult to do. You know, the difference between the shorter events and the longer events, the 400 IM, which Michael Phelps set a world record in, you know, last week, is one of the most difficult events that there are. You have to be well-rounded, be able to swim all four strokes. And there's not a lot of people in the world that can do that and do it really well. So I would say that that's probably one of the most difficult events to be great at.
Mm-hmm. And why do they select the certain strokes? Why isn't the side stroke included in this?
I'm not sure exactly, but the side stroke wouldn't be as appealing to watch.
Oh, really?
And it's a slow stroke. the other four strokes are, you know, much faster and more fluid and easy to teach for competitive strokes.
Uh-huh. And so, what will Phelps do for the sport of swimming? Will he go into school districts and try to either donate some of his money or raise money for pools in schools? How will he elevate the sport?
Well, just in the Milwaukee area, you're seeing communities that are unable to pass referendums to build pools because of the limited funding for the public education systems. What he'll do is, you know, still yet to be determined, and hopefully he'll do things like that and recognize that, that building grassroots programs and developing things with the younger kids is going to be the most important piece to increasing the base of, in the sport of swimming.
Mm-hmm. Well, he got me swimming again, I must say. I was inspired. I'm back in the pool. Matt, thank you so much for being with us. It was a fun hour. I appreciate your contribution.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure, Matt. Matt Miller is a swimming coach and co-director of the Walter Schrader Aquatic Center, which is based here in Milwaukee. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for rounding up a great team here for this coverage of the Olympics, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios and for your calls and interest. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We'll be back with another hour following the news, so stay with us.